Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so today's episode. This is officially another JREP session, although we really should call it an Emil session because he's taken the stage and educated us on some of the finer points of Japanese property financing and home loans as they relate to non-permanent residents of Japan. So these are people who, like many of our listeners, are living here on a more or less long-term basis, but are not permanent residents or citizens of Japan, or at least not yet. So many of these people think that they don't stand a chance to get a loan unless they are permanent residents, which is not true. And also that they wouldn't be eligible for 100% financing even if they do qualify, which apparently also isn't always true. So we talk about qualifying as a non-permanent resident or citizen. We also talk a bit about the history of the segment here in Japan, how it's different to other countries, and in particular, most Western countries. Various policies, scandals, and shady practices that have occurred here in the past. And then we pontificate a bit about whether the stricter environment that's now in place here is good or bad overall. How to prepare for your loan application in advance, how to check if you qualify for a loan ahead of time, credit checks or the equivalent of credit checks that are available here in Japan, and other little tidbits of information on the topic that may not be as obvious as some of you might think. So a really good riff on all matters related to financing and property loans here in Japan. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side. Japan Real Estate Experts panel back in session. Can we skip the intros? Like, people know who we are by now. Come on.
I don't know. Yeah, I think it's lots of people. This is the first time they, like, I've jumped onto videos for the very first time.
Okay, go for it.
Introductions are important. But as always, ladies first.
Okay, Tracy, you go ahead this time.
sorry to jump in. You know what we could do? We could actually record a reel, and then, you know, we can, you know, Ziv can put that at the start of each video. So, but
with production value and background music and our face coming in closer.
No. Just, you know, we'll do one really good take from one of our next ones, and actually you can cut that and use that.
Actually, I might try to spoof that with like 1880s music or what. Okay, we'll figure it out.
Anyway, enough, tomfoolery. I'm Tracy. I am the Minpaku or short-term rental expert. I've been running short-term rentals for my business, Tokyo Family Stays, for 10 years. And I also consult and help people with their profitability for their short-term rentals. So any questions about Minpaku in Japan, I'm your girl.
And I'm Blanca. Hello, everybody. I'm Blanca, and I'm the co-founder and marketing director of AgriForm. We are bilingual reform company in Chiba and in Tokyo. So we have two offices. We can take care of all your needs around Kanto, but we travel even to Yuzawa or to Shimoda, wherever you need us, because we can help you, whether you speak English or Japanese or which other languages. We are here for you, both for your commercial and private properties.
So don't say wherever, because the moment you do Kyoto, Fukuoka, places like that, I'm sending more jobs your way. Like, don't say wherever.
I was looking at a property in Kyoto yesterday to buy.
Yeah. Oh, there's some nice projects for you there.
But yeah, I think I'll stick with the one in Shimoda.
Mm. All right, Emil.
Okay, and my name's Emil. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo. So anyone looking at, I specialize in personal family homes for the most part. So if you're looking to, you know, buy your own family home using a Japanese mortgage, typical, you know, sub 1% interest rates, 100% financing, you've lived here, you know, just gotten married, starting a family.
Is it still sub 1, by the way? I was going to ask you because they started creeping up, right?
Well, sub 1, 0.5, yeah. 0.45. Okay. yeah, it depends on of course the conditions and whatnot, but you know, they're still very, very good, very affordable. Please reach out, send me an email, sales@realestate.jp, and I will be happy to have a call with you and discuss your options. And over to you, Ziv.
Yeah, and I'm Ziv Nakajimam again. Hello, everyone. I am co-founder and partner for the past 11 years at Nippon Tradings International, and we help people do everything that these fine people don't usually cover. So investment properties, land for development, purchase those holiday homes, get Blanca to renovate them, and then get Tracy to manage them for you. That's what we do. And yeah, we can service you whether you are in or out of Japan. We just represent you via authority that you bestow upon us. So Nippon Tradings International. And this is the Japan Real Estate Experts Panel. We're not going to talk about the event that's coming up because by the time we publish this, it might be gone already. Emil, tell us a little bit about the topic that you want to broach today.
Yes, today I've got an interesting one. So, you know, it's quite common in Japan for the real estate agent to also do the mortgage financing function, and we get the loans issued. So our agency, we have, because we're a licensed agency, we have the major banks, MUFJ, Mizuho, Rizona, and SMBC. Their home loan centers, they have a loan officer assigned to our agency, so we can actually submit loans, loan applications on the client's behalf. So the client will, you know, we get all the information from the client, get the client to fill out all the documents, and then we present it to the bank. We fax it to the bank, actually.
You still do you?
Oh my God, the amount of faxes I do. Every house viewing, if I want to schedule a viewing, I need to fax my business card to them. I spend about 2,000 yen a month on online fax portals. Yeah. So we had one client. Yeah, so we do that. So anything about finance questions you have, like I do for as a foreigner in Japan, I do that very, very frequently. One of the big ones that comes up in terms of requirements for a foreigner to get financing is that you need to have permanent residency. Okay. And for the most part, that's true. In order to get 100% financing, yes, you need permanent residency quite frequently. There are situations where you do not, though. One of the common ones where you don't need permanent residency is if your spouse is a Japanese citizen or a permanent resident holder. And that's kind of well known as well. But when both the spouses are not permanent residents, so you have a straight up foreign couple. In this case, we did like this two European family, so two Europeans. They wanted to buy a house, and generally the requirement is 20% deposit. The bank won't give a non-permanent resident holder a 100% financing. You can still get great financing, but it's at 20% deposit. However, if you meet certain criteria, some banks can be a little bit more flexible with, like they can accept you as for 100% financing. So with this couple, they'd been in Japan for 5 years. Being employed at the same company, like both the husband and wife have been working, you need to be working at least 3 years in the same company. And you can't be on a one-year visa. It needs to be at least 3 or 5 year visa. You have to be married. Okay. And another condition is you need to be in the same rental property, wherever you're currently living, you need to have been in the same property for at least 3 years. Okay, they want signs of stability. If they're going to give you 100% financing, they don't want indications that you can just sort of move willy-nilly, you know, maybe accept a job offer overseas quite easily. So we got all these conditions met, and we were able to get them the full 100% property value financing. The property was 92 million yen. So it's at like, you know, almost like 900,000 US. Mm. Well, much less now because of the exchange rate, but about that. For a brand new property in Shinagawa Ward, Shinagawa-ku.
Who was the lender? Who did you end up going with?
With us? The lender? Mitsui Sumitomo.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, you've mentioned that even if you're not residents and you don't meet this full criteria, they will give you 80%. In what kind of profile do you need to have to qualify for that, the normal non-PR in homeowner loans?
You need to be employed. You need to meet all the like long-term employment requirements. You don't need to be married or anything. Like, so generally, if you can get a loan, like if you have the right employment situation to get a loan as a permanent resident or as a Japanese citizen, right? So generally working, you know, at least a year, right? But say 2 or 3 years at the same company, and it's a good company, and you're not the business owner, you're just an employee. Along those lines, then you can get, generally if you have permanent residency, get 100% financing. If you don't have permanent residency, they will want 20% deposit. So you can get 80% financing.
But do you need to show some signs of heading towards a PR, or do you need to show that you've got like a future in Japan? That you like, how do you show that you're planning to stick with it?
You don't. That's why they want 20% deposit, because if you put in 20%, you're not just going to leave and bail on the loan. You've got too much skin in the game. That's why they don't want to give you 100% financing, because you haven't clearly expressed, proven that you are stable in the country and that you're long-term. Permanent residency indicates that the Japanese government has done their level of screening and has accepted you, that you're going to live here permanently, right? And that's why they're okay giving you 100% financing, right? Because you've already been screened by the Japanese government.
But the fact that you can even get 80% to somebody who, according to what you're saying, somebody who could have just moved here a year ago or 2 years ago, has, you know, is working at a Japanese company on a employment visa, basically, sponsored or not sponsored. That's enough for them to give you 80%. That's more than I knew. So that this is good information.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, think of it the other way. You're giving 20% commitment. That's why they know you're not going to leave. You've put down 20%. So that's what, you know, $200,000.
I get the logic. I just didn't think Japanese lenders were up for it. And that only qualifies to home loans, not going to happen with investment loans, I assume.
Yeah, that's more for mortgage. For investment loans, they probably want a little bit more, but to be honest, that's a completely different thing than I have done with. Like, look, I've done investment loans but again, they tend to be permanent residency holders already.
Now, if you've been following this podcast for a while, and in particular our JREP sessions, you're probably more than familiar with Blanca Kobayashi of Arc Reform. They're a bilingual renovation company serving clients in the Kanagawa and Kanto area, so Tokyo, Chiba, Saitama, Kawasaki, Yokohama. They can handle simple, small-scale projects as well as full house renovations, and they will work with you on the perfect design for your dream family home. But not only homes, Arc Reform also handle commercial property renovations, offices, restaurants, bars, shops, you name it, from traditional classics to the latest trends in interior design and renovations. So you want to email them for a free consultation and quote at info@arcreform.com. That's ARK Reform, all one word, .com, and give your home or commercial space the love and care that it deserves.
Already. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what they would look at if you're not a PR holder and just looking to buy a, you know, $100,000 or $200,000 type property. You know, in this case, you know, 10, 20, 30 million yen for investment. So yeah. And the interest rate though, however, they used to be more favorable with the interest rate. So I had one couple about 2 years ago that met similar conditions. Although in that case, the wife was Japanese, but usually for for that bank, it doesn't make a great deal of difference. But he ended up getting 0.475 interest rate variable. This now then, I think about a year and a bit ago, they changed it. I think there were some foreigners that were defaulting. They were giving these 100% loans that were non-permanent residents and leaving. And so the bank's like, nope, that was too cruisy. So what they actually did was they gave the interest rate now is not that zero point, like ridiculously cheap one. It's about 0.14. Sorry.
1.4. This is like the rental situation. It's sorry, this is not a family-friendly podcast. The dickhead foreigners that end up giving everyone a bad image and making it worse for everybody else terms-wise.
Yes. When a few people skip out and default, then the bank sort of reassess what they're doing. And it's not just for foreigners. Yeah. There was a bit of a workaround with the flat 35, flat Sanjugo loan option that used to allow you to buy a... They were a government-backed scheme, and they still are. They allowed you to purchase a second home, and they ignored your previous debt, your previous financing. So you could actually over-leverage, as long as it's for your personal home. What a lot of people were doing was they were using that to actually buy an investment property. And there were agents, like Japanese real estate, and this wasn't foreigners, this was Japanese people doing it. Japanese real estate agents were calling up, all the cold calling, saying, hey, you can buy a property, et cetera, or they're running full seminars saying you can get an investment property using a home loan. And this is where you get the flat 35, and they were just targeting these people to buy investment properties using the flat 35 and say, just lie to the bank.
Yeah.
But what was happening when these people were doing it, that the agent is having a great time because they're getting lots of sales commission. However, what's happening is the buyers were getting a bit stretched financially, and they didn't have any buffer when the property is not rented. So what happens if the property doesn't get rented, they can't meet the mortgage repayments. And they try, but they don't miss the repayment. And the bank says, hey, how come you're not paying for your home loan? And the client would say, oh, well, actually, no, it's not. It's an investment property, right? I'm just using it to invest. And that's what it's for. And they're like, oh, wait, no, that's not what you're allowed to do. You're not meant to. What? And they checked. You never even lived there. It was just an investment from the outset. So they turned around and they sort of cut that and said, you can no longer do that. We won't let you overextend. We will always consider your previous income. So you can't just buy a second property. They'll always consider your previous debt. So if you already have a home, you cannot buy another one. So same as what the typical Japanese are doing. Japanese banks have been doing. They did that as well. So it was a good thing until people started abusing it and breaking it. Yeah. So, and that's not because of foreigners' behavior. That's that was Japanese and on a large scale, and that's why they changed the rules. And you can't do that anymore.
People are often surprised when we tell them, and this is something that we've learned from you already a couple of years ago, is that there's no drawing on your equity here. You basically evaluated solely on the income that you have, right? The stability of your income, not any other assets. And people get annoyed by that because it doesn't give them that constantly leveraging engine that they're used to from other Western countries. But I think it's a very safe and healthy approach on the lender's behalf to not let people overextend themselves, right?
I feel so. And I feel this is also the risk you have in, I'm Australian. So markets that you have in Australia where, you buy a property for, $500,000, you put 20% deposit. And in general, banks want 20% down payment. You put in 100 grand, right, deposit, and the bank will give you the other 400. You bought a $500,000 property. Then in 2 years' time, they revalue that property at $600,000. Hey, all of a sudden, you know what, Emil? We'll loan you. You have another $100,000 of equity.
Yeah.
So we can loan you another 400. You can buy another $500,000 property. I haven't put any money in it though. The market has grown and allowed me to buy another property. But when that's why I think there's a bit of a fear of the bubble of a bubble.
It helps curb speculation, definitely. Yeah.
Because it's the speculation or the market the bank's allowing more financing on the same asset to grow that asset's value across the market wide. Yeah. And thus it grows the whole industry and people keep doing that. That's why I think there's a bit of concern. Whereas in Japan, that doesn't happen. So that's why when people say, oh, property depreciate, or what if it, you know, if it's too low, it's too cheap, interest rates are too low, isn't that going to be a bubble? And what happens when it bursts? Well, because the market dynamics are different than in the West, you can only buy one property using these very, very cheap loans. And yeah, you can't just get your equity out of it and refinance and get another property. So a good example is if you've got, say, an 80 million yen property, and let's say you've paid off 30 million yen, you have 50 million yen left in mortgage repayments. In Australia, if I wanted to refinance, the bank will re-give me back the full value. Yeah. Like I can get another 30 million yen of cash out to spend on something else. In Japan, if I want to refinance, they will only let me refinance the remaining value of the property. So yeah, the purpose of refinancing is only because I want a cheaper interest rate. Okay. Or they'll let you refinance up to a longer term. So, you know, let's say there's 20 years left on my mortgage.
More of a restructure than a refinance, yeah, right?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, and I think, look, I can't afford to pay the monthly payments are high, my job has changed or whatnot. Then, okay, that 50 million yen with 20 years of mortgage left to pay, I can ask them to, look, give me another 50, like let's refinance that, but over a 25 or 35 year term. And thus my mortgage is spread out over more time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I reduce the monthly payments, but they haven't given me more money. I don't have extra cash out of it. I've just changed the payment plan for the property. And that's all they'll give you is the remaining balance plus any kind of refinancing cost. So when you refinance, you have to pay some scrivener fees because they do some title modification. So that might be a few hundred thousand yen there. And that's it. So there's no, the banks just won't give you endless money, unfortunately, at you know, a fraction of a percent.
No, I think it's a healthy environment. I'm not contesting it, actually.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, it gives me confidence in the system.
Mm. Do you think that this is also what you've noticed with this foreign non-PR couple? Are you seeing a bit more foreigner-friendly policies coming in? I know that for business loans, there is that Tokyo Metro business loan system where you have to have a new-ish company, no guarantor, no collateral, and you can actually borrow quite a lot of money. And it's specifically targeted at foreigners. So this is not for...
This is who? Tokyo Metro?
Tokyo Metro.
Is that a bank or just like a...
It's through the J... it's through the J... I was going to say JNT. That's not right. I can send you...
That's right. Tokyo Metro.
But it is a Tokyo Metro... and it's specifically targeted foreigners who have young businesses. So, go ahead.
So is that the one which is, it's not really at foreigners, but rather foreign investment. So foreign, like, so not like,
foreign,
not
my, if you're a foreign daihyo.
But that's like sort of a newly established business. You're trying to set up business. It's foreigners coming into Japan that are trying to establish a new business here. I don't think it's for someone like myself who, you know, if I just want to establish a company and say, I've been here for 20 years, I'm a permanent resident.
It didn't specify. Like, Mike, I'm working on my business plan now. And with my accountant, and there doesn't seem to be any, you know, small print about how long you as the daihyo has been in Japan. Mm-hmm. It's more about how old is the company. So I have three companies here, one of which is like 30 years old. Obviously, I can't use that one, but I have another company which I set up during the pandemic, which I wasn't able to, you know, cash in on any COVID money. I'm looking at, you know, it's a very clean company. So I'm looking at maybe, you know, getting some long-term debt and doing some investments. I'll let you know. Watch this space. I'll see how it goes.
I will.
And it,
I think I found the Metro Bank.
Yeah, but I just didn't know if there's if the you know you guys are sort of feeling that there's a little more you know foreigner friendly policies in the winds or
I'm going. So on about your question, so I don't feel they're more foreigner friendly. I don't see there's a change.
They're slightly looser overall, I think, not foreigner specific, maybe.
Mm. No. It's always been kind of similar for foreigners, right? You need permanent residency or a Japanese spouse, you know, or the what I explained before, you kind of with some, you know, some banks, if you meet certain other requirements that can show your stability. And that's kind of been the same for a long time. It's not becoming more friendly and it's not becoming really more strict.
Mm.
Okay. It's kind of the same. Maybe they're just accustomed now that there's more foreigners that are buying. And so just the numbers are increasing and people are interacting. The Japanese agents are just now getting more inquiries from foreigners, which is not, so maybe they become familiar with that, but it was neither friendly nor unfriendly. To be honest, it was kind of the same. It's, as an applicant, you know, Japan's a lot of checkboxes. So if you want to apply for a home loan, they check which company do you work for? How long you've been there? What's your employment situation? What's your credit history? Right? Do you have bad credit, rather? They check these things. And then for residents, if you're a Japanese citizen, great. We know you're going to live here. If you're foreign, if you're a foreigner, well, then what kind of residency do you have? And what's your stability? Because, listen, a foreigner who's just been, you know, who's hasn't been here for very long, or there's a more chance of a foreigner just moving abroad, returning to their home country, than there is of a Japanese citizen, right? And that's a fair assumption. You know, I know more of my foreign friends that I've met here over the past 20 years I've been here that have left Japan than my Japanese friends that have just permanently relocated from Japan. So I think it's fair. And I feel that hasn't really changed. It's just a bunch of checkboxes, which is why when I often do the phone call with potential clients, the initial like tends to be like 1 hour to 90 minutes of a initial consultation to discuss everyone's scenario, is to really explain, okay, what's your situation? What are your, you know, your residency, your employment, your income? I ask all these questions and get some clarity about where they're at. And that way I can just say, okay, I know this bank and this bank and this bank will meet your needs. And they are the ones that will give you 100%. Don't try to figure it out on your own on the internet, because everyone's situation is so different. You're going to have a hell of a time. And the sad thing is you may rule yourself out of the ability to purchase because you missed some important information or you didn't know there's some other opportunity. So please reach out and I can help.
And go to Tokyo Expat Network and ask questions.
No, don't go there. No, but the other thing is that you really, before you even approach the bank, you've really got to have your story straight in a way, because as soon as you might want to spitball and talk to the bank about how you can work together. But as soon as you change, you know, like the situation, then you're likely to get rejected. So, you know, speak to a consultant beforehand, get your business plan or get your like plan of attack before you start the conversation with the bank. Because otherwise if they see you as sort of, you know, chopping and changing, you know, from where I come from, it would be like, oh, I'm spitballing. I'm, you know, trying to work within your system. And it's like, no, it comes across as shifty and shady. So having a plan and then getting them to deliver on what their part is just a very clean transaction. And it keeps the Japanese bankers' heads from exploding.
One of the very useful things that we found out is that people should check actually their credit score. Because a lot of people, they end up having like unpaid bills for something super small, and they are not even aware of that. And then it all pops up when they're applying for any loan.
How do you check that in Japan?
In Tokyo, there are offices where you can have that checked out. Very sure Emil would know exactly the name or the location. But I know that there are offices where you basically you can go there with your ID, and they will send you. They will then send you. I think you pay something inbound, and they'll send you.
Yeah.
Whether you own money somewhere, how much you're where.
And it's usually.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
And it's usually tax from a plate, from a crew that you no longer live in.
It was
a bill that you missed, and like the tax office never forgets.
The bills that you miss are the biggest culprit, honestly, especially if you are moving.
Moving houses, exactly.
Mm. So let me talk about this one in detail. Yes, so it's cic.co.jp is the credit institution in
Japan. Put that in the show notes, Ziv.
Yep, cic.co.jp. And you go to that site and you have three options. So your credit score, it's not a score. They don't care if you have heaps of credit cards and a long history of credit. What they care about is if you have any bad credit history, tardiness, non-repayments of credit debt. And generally what classifies as credit debt, it's actually, it's not like unpaid gas bills or utility bills, it's credit. So mortgages, home loans, credit cards, mobile phone plans, mobile phone contracts, they tend to be the big ones. Okay. So if you, let's say for example, and it's not, you know, I do a lot of business expense on my credit card. And if you're paying it, fine. Even if you've got it racked up to, you know, you've got, say, so I pay my credit card off every month. I think a lot of us do that. We use it just for financing, like just for convenience, but there's no ongoing debt. Every month it gets paid off. And that's completely fine. Even some people, they do the Ribo Barai and they have, say, maybe 500,000 yen of shopping that they've done that they're paying off every month. That's also fine. But let's say you just haven't paid and you've defaulted on the payments.
Yeah.
And not just like you're 2 days late or 3 days late. That's no drama. But rather you've just got two or three credit cards you haven't even paid and they've got 1 million yen of debt each. They've gone to collections or there's different kind of black markings or black payments that you've missed. And sometimes a delayed payment or non-payment for 1 or 2 months, that will show up in your credit score over the past few years. But what really comes up is when it goes to collections, there's a separate black mark that says it's been sent to like collections called IDO. And then it's got like, I believe it's a 5 year. It says from once you pay and settle that black mark, they're going to stay recorded on your CIC report for 5 years, I believe, 5 or 7. I think it's 5 years. And then you can't get like, if you have that, you can't get a mortgage. We had one poor girl that she had, I think it was her old mobile phone. Mm-hmm. That it was like one of the final, like, I think she thought she'd canceled it and she wasn't even aware of it. But like the last three bills or so, 3 months, so it was like 30,000 yen of bills were not paid. But it's too small for the bank, for the SoftBank to keep sending anything. So she'd never got any notification of it. It just sort of disappeared into the ether. But for 4 years, it's just like, if you look at her report, basically this for, I think it was SoftBank, just unpaid, 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 unpaid every month. So how it looks is like each credit card, right? You have like your SMBC credit card and your JAL credit card. It says every month, paid on time, paid on time, paid on time, paid on time. And then there might be like 1 month delay. That's fine. But this one, just for 4 years or whatever, unpaid, 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 and it's gone to collections. And she looks at it and goes, what the hell is this? It's a line item that I've never seen. And it's ongoing still today that it's not paid.
And even after that, she's got, even once she pays it, she'll need to wait 5 years.
Yep. Once she pays it, it says now it's cleared. But on the top, there's a record. It says that she's had this like collection amount of 30,000 yen that's been gone to collections. And the expiry date is like 5 years from the final payment date. And she couldn't get a loan. She can't buy her house because she's got, you know, permanent resident, meets all the other requirements, but cannot get it because of that mark.
Yeah.
I feel most of my clients, to be honest, I do ask them when we're talking, look, do you have any bad debt, any outstanding credit? And a lot of them are like, yeah, no, like, you know, credit card, I haven't actually done it, like nothing, a mobile phone bill gets paid, credit card. So we don't do that check. I don't require everyone to check it. But sometimes when I ask that question, the clients that turn around and say, yeah, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I kind of just, you know, effed off SoftBank. Or, my credit card, yeah, I've gone into a payment arrangement with them. I stopped and then we've agreed on a payment plan to pay off a few million yen over like, you know, 2 or 3 years. Like, okay, in that case, let's check.
Yeah.
So as soon as the person lacks some confidence that, cool, yeah, no, I'm clear. I've never had any issue at all. Then, okay, fine, we don't need to check. Otherwise, we do need to check. As soon as they're a bit hesitant, they think, in the back of their mind, they remember a time. Look, unpaid gas bill, no drama. Like, you know, they repaid, it was cut off, and then they repaid it because they forgot the convenience store. Usually that's no issue. And to check, there are three ways to check. Online, the system is terrible. You can go online, put your information in, and you pay with your credit card. It needs to be one of the approved credit cards. And a lot of them that are like JCB or some other sort of stuff. So many people with credit cards, it just won't work. It does not work. I've got a typical SMBC Visa card and a Visa card. It works for me, but I can't even, it's 1,000 yen to do it. You do it and you just download it instantly. However, if I have a client that wants to do it, I can't use my credit card because it needs to be the credit card for the person who's applying.
In your name. I can't use it to do a credit check on potential tenants, you're saying.
Yeah, exactly, right? I can't pay to download someone else. Like if you wanted to do it, and some people say, look, I don't have a credit card.
Yeah.
I can't say, look, just put I'll pay for it for you. It won't work.
Yeah.
So one, if you can go try it online and they'll call your phone number, they give you a code, and then you enter that code into the system. It takes about 10 minutes to do the whole thing. Enter your credit card, and then you can download the transaction document. And it's very complex to read. Usually I tell my clients, just send me some photos, send me the PDF, and I will very quickly let you know if it's clear or not. If the credit card doesn't work, you have two other options. One is via post. So you have to send the request in and go to the post office for a 1,000 yen stamp thing, revenue stamp, whatnot. Get that done. Or the other way to do it, I think it's actually a money order. It's really, you know, complex. They'll post it back to you.
I'm looking at it now. It's saying you fill in the form and you go and pay the fixed amount postal money certificate issued by Japan Post. Then you put everything in the into the post, and then you post it to them.
Yeah.
And it'll take 10 days from after they receive it, and that you'll get your report.
Sure. And the other way, or you go to the office. The office, they had it in Shinjuku. I think they've just reopened up, but they've been closed for about 2.5 years because of COVID. They're not allowing anyone to come to their branch windows. So yeah, so there were the three options. So it's been really, really tedious.
If you go in person, do they give it to you immediately?
Yes.
And so you just pay them the 1,000 yen, show them your ID, and then they spit out the report.
Yeah, fill out the form. Yeah.
But that seems much easier.
Yeah, but the office has been closed. You can't do that for the past 2 or 3 years. I think they've just opened up now.
It says.
Oh, they still say the office is closed.
It's saying temporary closing.
Oh, okay. Oh no, it's still closed. So there you go.
Japan full.
Yeah. So
hey, Japan, the government said we don't even have to wear masks on the street anymore. Get over it.
Oh, but Kishida said yesterday that when they are going to have the G20 summit, they will still have to follow all COVID-19 precautions and regulations.
I think that's
going to bring here G20 officials, and they that it's next year, by the way. It's not even now; it's next year, and he thinks that they will still follow.
Well, so I think that lots of places, even when I go to the US or any kind of event or venue, it says we'll follow the recommended guidelines and procedures, like
the
regulations at the time of the venue and of the government. So it's if the recommendation is to wear masks, and that's it. If the government recommendation is no mask, then that's what they follow. So they're not really insisting on certain precautions. They're saying whatever the government regulation, whatever the government recommended precautions are at the time, that's what we'll follow. So it's the kind of generic statement that they have. Just quickly, I want to, before I forget, about the mortgage, one other aspect. Oh, there's two other points that were interesting.
I got to jump off.
Oh, you run. Okay. One is this couple just had a baby a month ago, and the wife is on maternity leave as well. Still, no problem. A lot of people think, oh, if I'm on leave, I can't do anything. Nope. With certain documentation, certain proof from and documentation and requests from the employer, we're able to get proof, and the company was okay with that. The bank was okay with it. And another thing was this couple actually, they applied for a mortgage about 6 months ago, but at that time, the husband had not been 3 years in his company. And one of the requirements is 3 years in the company. So he didn't meet that. So they wanted about 90 mil, 80, 90. And the banks just came back with, look, we'll give you like 60 because you haven't met all the requirements of the time of employment and what have you. And his company had actually been bought out. Like he'd been only a year at the current company, but they had bought out his previous company. So in total, if you calculate it together, October was 3 years. October 1st was 3 years at the company. And so we applied in like June, and the bank said, no, it's not okay. You need to wait. Like this is what is what the neck is, the bottle, it's called the bottleneck is. So we can reapply in October. So in October, I resent the documents and discussed on the phone with our bank guy. And he's like, yeah, sure. They should be okay now. They meet all the requirements. And that was a strategy. So I've been working with them since earlier in this year. And then June, I think April or June, we did try to apply, and we got sort of the feedback that it's not okay. The employment doesn't meet the requirements yet. Please wait till October. And we did that. And they knew they were having a baby, which was just born in September. So that's why a lot of rush and a lot of planning. We're able to do it. So employed 3 years right at the 3 years and 1 month. No permanent residency. Mum is on maternity leave right now as we speak. And we're just in the bank for 3 hours yesterday doing all the paperwork. So
great, though.
Yeah, there's lots of stuff. Yeah, lots of fine details. Don't decide for yourself. Please reach out, I'll happy to have a talk with you about your financing situation.
You know, that's the one thing I always comment on all these comments I see online. I always go, just talk to Emil, because he that's actually his job. He knows what he's doing. Don't ask the wider forum, because every case differs.
I'm going to jump in and you know, give myself a plug a little bit here as well, because there's a lot of trending hashtags about Airbnb bust right now. About, you know, here in Japan, we're in a massive like we're in boom time. We've had a really lean time for 2 years and we're going into boom. But the US, if you're in short-term rentals in the US, you are facing some really hard times right now. And a lot of people are, you know, complaining online, you know, and no one knows what they're talking about. That's why you need to talk to somebody who knows the business, who knows how to, you know, free information is really only as good as what you pay for it. So yeah,
no, it's the way it is. It's the way it is in any industry.
Yeah, anyway. Hire somebody. Yeah.
It's you know, but the basic problem with people is they think that all these experts, that whatever, you know, you pay them for a consultation, an hour consultation or something, and they think, oh, it's expensive or something. But the amount of time and money you save on this, or in MLK's, you know, people often is like, oh, I already know I can't get a loan. No, you don't. Yeah. You don't.
Like just what we proved today. You don't know what you don't know, basically.
You don't know whether you can do it or not. You don't know people when they buying property, they go, oh, I'm thinking, you know, maybe I want to, you know, rent it out. Yes, we know somebody to do that because I don't know. It's not mine. They ask me, oh, what do you think? I don't know.
I never thought that I was in a position to buy a house. I didn't think that, you know, being self-employed, that I'd be in a position to buy a house in Japan.
That is a miracle, to be honest. That is fantastic.
And
lots of self-employed can get a house.
And I've, you know, we've managed to build a, you know, a 1.something million, you know, dollar house with an income producing asset built right into it. Built it from scratch with our own, and I never thought that we would be in a position to do that because, you know, we were self-employed and, we weren't going to sell our engineering company for millions of dollars. We're just, you know, regular working folks. So, yeah, it's been.
My consultation is free, by the way.
Nice.
My first consultation is free too. And I think Ziv, you're the same, right? Like, you know, the discovery time.
Definitely the first consultation or two. And sometimes beyond that, if we can also generate content off it, then that's a fair exchange for us. But once it gets too detailed and people actually want immediate feedback on stuff that they're considering spending money on, by that point we'll need to be engaged. We're not going to do that on that.
My first consultation is free too, and then I can see whether that person is a good fit for my skills, and also if, you know, that the client can see whether or not they, you know, they see value in what I'm saying, because it's, you know, like it's got to be a clean transaction on both sides. So, you know, there's lots of choice out there.
I always tell my husband.
I have to jump off. I'm sorry.
Oh, no worries. The first one is.
See you soon.
Bye.
So this has been fun. I have to jump off as well. So I think anyone that's got questions that, you know, you want us to talk about, please, you know, just get in contact. We're not people of mystery. We're easy to find. We are easy to contact. Get your questions in and, give us something to really dig our teeth into and have the hive mind create something that's a good YouTube video. So
absolutely.
And subscribe.
Yes. Yes, we need that. We need that.
Like and subscribe.
Buy a house.
Yes.
I don't cost for consultation.
Right?
Buy a house,
also take
renovate
action.
It.
You know how, you know,
put it
stop,
out to
don't just listen to, if you're interested in buying something, go ahead and do it. Yeah. So
right now it's a great time action. To do it, actually.
Right now is a great time to do it.
Great time to do it. Especially when you're bringing money from abroad.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
My goodness.
Definitely.
30%
okay.
More,
lovely. Lovely.
See
people.
You later, everyone.
Guys, take care. Bye.
Bye.
So there you have it. We stand educated. I really love hearing the panel members preach on their respective areas of expertise. It's such a pleasure to learn from the experts. I really hope you feel the same way about these sessions as well. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa, and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, Or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hidoshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku!